when you hear that music, you know that the man, the myth, the legend is not far off. Kim Holmes joins us on a Friday, and so always good to hear your voice. How you doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, my brother. It's great to hear yours. And greetings to Marines everywhere.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. The now, just so everybody knows, Kim and I are recording this because as you're listening to it, I'll be down, hopefully changing lives, doing a little post-traumatic winning down in San Diego at Marine Corps Air Station Miramar, California. And yeah, where they filmed Top Gun.
Top Gun, yeah.
Yeah, baby. And Kelly McGillis, what's up? So, yeah, so anyway, but Kim graces very graciously hopping on this Thursday afternoon that we're going to pretend it's Friday. So, New Year's, you and your bad back. How did New Year's treat you?
New Year's treated me the same as it's been treating me for the last couple of months. like garbage. But it's okay. I'm having a pretty good day today.
You are?
Yeah, yeah.
So how much how much does it change? How much does your back change?
It gets so when I stand up, if I stand straight up, my right leg almost gives out.
Oh, really?
From my hip down to my knee. Yeah, the pain is out of 10. Some days it's an 8. Never below a 6 out of 10. And that's just the way it goes. It's showbiz, baby.
That's showbiz, baby. Yeah, that's not, that's not our favorite part of showbiz.
Because I had a stent put in.
Right.
My blood's thin. And I'm taking this drug called Plavix. It's a heart medication.
Yeah.
And it, when they just put a, they put a stent in at the Widow's Maker. the junction of uptown or downtown. so my blood's thin. And I had a CAT scan done a couple of months ago before this procedure. And it's a vertebrae in my right side. And if they give me a shot now and it works, they know right where to do it and all that stuff, but they're afraid to do it because they don't want to get any blood mixed in with my spinal fluid, because that's a no-no. That means you're in deep caca. So they got to wait a while, and hopefully with the pain management I'm doing now will help alleviate it. So I can get up and about. I'd love to be walking around without my walker and stuff. And some days I can't. It just sucks, Mac. No, I'm not whining or complaining. It's just, you know, the way it is.
Showbiz.
I've played real hard in these 75 years, and paybacks are a bitch, aren't they?
is that what this is? You took too much out, and now it's clawing something back?
Yeah, it's not right. Because I still got to, you know, I still hang out with Peter Pan in my head, you know. So I'm young at heart in spite of my age. And I think that way. I act that way pretty much. Don't drink anymore. But
whoa.
I did have a drink on Christmas.
What'd you have?
I had a very large shot of very old bourbon.
Very large shot of very old bourbon.
Well, and some eggnog.
Oh.
And believe me, it's all I needed.
That's it? You're that much of a life?
I had a grand. Listen, it was a large shot. I'm not talking an ounce and a half. I'm talking probably 3 ounces.
That's not a shot, yeah. I don't think.
No, well, it's my shot, and a Kimmy shot, and I got a nice buzz. It was pretty wonderful, but and that's probably the first drink I've had. I think I had a beer about 3 months ago. Before that, yeah.
Whoa! Who are you?
That's what everybody's been asking. What's your problem?
What is your major malfunction?
Come on, Bongo. Get with the program.
Exactly. Well, just so you know, I didn't even know the last time I had a drink. I didn't have a drink on Christmas or New Year's. So you're one ahead of me.
I didn't have anything New Year's. And usually New Year's, when I had the restaurant, when we started the party, the restaurant was open. Kimmy started drinking champagne.
Oh, my God.
And Kimmy drank champagne.
I don't think
all the way through.
I don't think drinking, all the way drinking's not the right term. Ingesting.
I just love champagne. And
and he likes New Year's, too.
I love New Year's. And threw parties for 50 years, and I haven't been out since I sold the restaurant. We haven't been out New Year's Eve.
Whoa.
We stay at home. I just don't feel like going out. Up until last year, I was still drinking champagne. But not in copious amounts. But I have my favorite champagne that I recommend to people that want a nice bottle and don't want to spend too much.
Yeah.
Is a French champagne called Vive Clicquot Yellow Label. And we used to sell it for about $60 in the restaurant. And you could get it in the store for probably $40. And it's made by the same people who do, Cristal.
Oh, you mean Cristal?
Cristal, yes.
Yeah, I don't know why I know that, but I know that. I mean, because I don't know shit about booze.
I probably told you that, or your son did one time.
Oh, really?
But yeah, and that's okay. That is a great bottle of champagne, and I recommend it for anyone who is out wining and dining and wants a special bottle. You don't have to drop the money that you do for Dom Perignon or Cristal or any of those high-end French champagnes. It's a French champagne, but it's I just love the flavor and nice bubbles tickling my nose when I put my beak in there. And that's a great champagne. But we had them from, I think, Cook's all the way up to Cristal. And that ranged from, I think, about $18 a bottle up to $300 a bottle. When I was in the biz, and now I'm sure Cristal is probably closer to somewhere over 400 now.
Over 400. That's about. I hope that tastes really good.
For me, it's the same company that manufactures Yellow Label, Vive Clicquot, and I think Vive Clicquot is better.
Oh, really?
I think the Cristal.
Well, I was talking about more like, I mean, that's a lot of money to pull out of your pocket just to drink it.
Well, Louis the 13th, the brandy, the cognac.
Yeah.
Louis Trey. That's over, my cost is over, at the restaurant the last time I bought it was $1,000 a bottle. I paid that. So you can imagine what a shot, and I mean an ounce and a half, means.
Now, do you measure and, that? Do you measure that?
You're damn right, Richie measured it. I measured it. You're damn right. And we did everything to specs. Yeah.
Whoa.
So, you know, you, that's what I'm saying. You find a champagne or a wine or whatever you like to drink that tastes good to you and your significant other, buy it. Hopefully it's around the ones I like, Veuve Clicquot. There's a couple other ones that are a little cheaper than that even. Moët Chandon White Star. That's a great bottle of champagne too. And, they teamed up with a winery in, Napa Valley in St. Helena. And they make it in the States in the champagne technique.
What's
technique?
What is the champagne technique?
The champagne technique is they double ferment it, and the first fermentation, they do it in a barrel, and then the second one is done in the bottle. And the true champagne is only grapes from the Champagne region of France. You can't really call it sparkling wine, or Italians call theirs Prosecco, which is very affordable and very, it's a little fruitier, which translates to be a little sweeter, but it's deluxe. It's very good. The wine has to be, the grapes have to be grown in the Champagne region of France. Yeah.
What happens if they're not? If they're grown around the rest of the world?
Well, they can't be called champagne.
They can't?
Well, you can. You can call them any damn thing you want if you own the winery.
Yeah.
But they mainly call it champagne style.
Oh.
Or sparkling wine.
I think that's kind of bullshit. Like we can only call it champagne, even though you grow beets in Iowa, you can't call them beets because we only have beets here in Beet County in Beet County, Arizona.
A little more complicated than that, Matt.
Like what? Explain it. Like, come on.
Because they're French.
Oh, there you go, the fucking French.
And that's. You know, like in Italy, I used to live in Tuscany, where Florence is.
Oui.
And outside of Florence is a region called the Chianti region. And they, one specific area grows the Chianti Classico grape. And the only wine called Chianti Classico has the Gallo Nero, the black rooster on the neck of the bottle.
Right.
I've showed it to you.
Yeah.
And that is the only region that you can have true Chianti Classico.
Oh, well, right?
But that's the way the wine goes. That's the wine business.
So what if I grow the same Chianti Classico grape, but I grow it in Napa, California, and I can't call it Chianti Classico?
You can't put the black rooster.
Well, fuck the black
you
rooster.
You can call it Chianti Classico anywhere you want to grow Nebula grape.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You can. You can call it any wine, anything you want, anywhere in the world you want. But, even if you grow the same grapes, but there's something about the soil and all this muckety-muck stuff that does produce different flavors of wine.
Yeah, that stands to reason, but I just don't like that whole, like, yeah, you can't call it this. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. And it's that's just the way it is over there.
I'm about to call my mud pie Chianti Classico.
Well, you could. Put, and you can put a black rooster right in the middle of it.
Yeah, upside down. The
a little chocolate one with the just stick the feet in the pie.
Okay, let me ask you this: as a joint, as a guy who owns a joint, I mean,
yeah.
And when you buy really, really expensive alcohol, how do you control people not taking a snip out of that or whatnot?
Well, first of all, you have to have an honest bartender, which in most instances is an oxymoron. To find an honest bartender like I did with Richie West is pretty tough. Now, there are a lot of them. Now, they have guns that...
What does that mean?
The alcohol is upside down, and they plug it into this little spigot, and you punch it, and it measures out exactly whatever, an ounce, ounce and a half, ounce and three quarters, or an ounce and a tenth, whatever you set it at.
Right.
And they shoot booze out of guns now.
Right. And the purpose
when you're in nightclubs, and I'm of the school of free pour.
Oh, that's bad accounting, though.
Fuck it. When I pour a shot, I pour a shot, and that's why I wasn't a good bookkeeper. I gave probably too much away for sure.
Nah.
But
what do you about?
Got a fair shake in my place.
I know, but what about when you have the really expensive stuff?
I measure it. I measure everything, Mac. I didn't have a lot of cheap booze in my restaurant. So, you know, you had a shot glass there, and you pour an ounce and a half. I always poured an ounce and a half. A lot of places around town will pour an ounce to an ounce and a quarter. They've cut way back because booze has gone up so much. It's pretty hard to find an ounce and a half shot.
I was never a fan of that. So, I mean, when I order a gin and tonic, my mouth expects a certain taste.
Yes, it does.
You know what I'm saying? And when it doesn't, when it's too heavy on the gin,
it's not a gin and tonic.
Yeah.
No, it's too much. That's why I always stuck to an ounce and a half. If somebody wanted something on the rocks, a single, I poured them a single. On the rocks, depends on how much. A lot of people now don't like ice so much. Not a lot of ice. I'm the guy that will take a double shot of vodka and with a glass full of ice with a twist of lemon, and I will nurse that because the ice melts and the liquor, you know what I'm saying? It stretches it out. But a lot of people just give it to me straight up, you know, and that's everybody's taste. But booze is real technical now because it's so damn expensive to buy from the restaurant point of view.
That's where the money is, baby.
Yeah, and it used to be. I think we talked about this, but. Back when I was starting out in the business, you made your money on your booze, and if you could break even on your food, that was fine. But
no.
Today, you got to make money on your food and your booze because the food cost is so high, and that's the way it is. And you're in an area where there's a lot of great restaurants that do really well, and but you watch the bartenders pour, and they'll pour measured shots, unless you're in a loosey-goosey nightclub where the bartenders are flipping bottles and pouring behind their back and doing all the fancy stuff, you can bet your sweet dippy that's not going to be a high-end booze. You know?
But come on, we all know that booze is watered down.
No, it's not.
Come on, if you're doing that stuff with the bottles and all that stuff, you know.
No, you use cheap booze, man. You use cheap booze. That's how you get away with that.
Got it.
And the guys that are flipping the bottles, like in Vegas, where you just participated, if you go into a big club and you watch them doing all their tricks behind the bar, it's real booze. It's just not high-end booze. That's all.
All right.
Because you're going to spill it. You're going to drop a bottle from time to time. And you don't want to be dropping $100 bottles of bourbon or vodka or rum or anything.
Yeah, that would get that would get your ass fired pretty quick, yes.
Well, before you got it mopped up, you'd be out the back door. I'm pretty sure of that.
And nothing personal.
Absolutely nothing personal.
Nothing personal. You just got to go, son.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's talk about, since you didn't participate in New Year's, we got to stay away from that. I hope
everybody did roast beef, prime rib over ribeye over Christmas,
like me,
and like you, and New Year's.
Okay, you had steak in the bag, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, now that's normally top sirloin.
I thought that was filet mignon. I had, you bought a tenderloin.
I don't know.
Susan bought a tenderloin. That was filet mignon.
So what happens to a dish like that when you... So steak in a bag is essentially steak, and it's dipped in kind of a combination of egg and some olive oil and some spices, right? And then over the top of that is this concoction of bread, cheese, garlic, salt, blah, blah, salt and pepper or some other seasoning. So it makes this crust, all right? So that's essentially the concept of the dish. Now, my question is this. Why wouldn't you do that over the top of other cuts of beef? I mean...
Well, you can. You can. You sure can. You can do that over any beef. If you want to... A top round or a sirloin. I've seen sirloins with a Parmesan crust.
Right.
And they do that right at the end and put that crust on and put it under the broiler. And it's deluxe. But it you can use any kind of steak. I think when you use the tenderloin, that's the filet mignon, baby. That's the tenderest, and the key is not to overcook it, which you never have, Susan. That first time I ate that, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven.
We started using the meat thermometer, so much easier to make sure that it comes out moist. Because the play in the oven, in the thickness of the cut of meat, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
All that will affect the meat at some point. It is a little, the top sirloin is a little, I mean, tougher than ribeye. And we were talking the other night about, geez, what would this taste like if we did it on a series of ribeye steaks that were, you know, placed next to each other. So kind of the same effect, but much different cut of meat.
Well, if you did a top sirloin, for example,
yes,
if you marinated that overnight with a little wine, olive oil, garlic, salt and pepper, maybe throw a little some kind of any other kind of seasoning you want. You put it in a dish and put it in the fridge and turn it over a couple of times in 24 hours. And what that meat does, it breaks it, the meat down and tenderizes it. And then you can go ahead and do your, coat it with anything you want and bake it off. And it should, you got your meat tomorrow, it should be divine. I mean, very tender, and I think you'd do a great job.
All right. Yeah. All right. Just we just had a little bit of a conversation about that. The another question that came up the other day, and that was, can you explain? There's so much different technology. Can you explain what air frying is?
Well, it's these new ovens. It's like those we were talking about, a confection oven that sits on the countertop and they air fry. And it's I think it's intense heat and a lot of wind circulating in that oven to so all the moisture is absorbed and you dry it out and crisp it up quickly. And I have not air fried anything in my life. It's new technology since I've retired. But I am going to get involved in that again with this new restaurant I'm doing. One of the ovens can air fry.
All right, I'll read you a couple things. Air fryers require less oil than traditionally frying foods, making them generally healthier than their oil-immersed counterparts. For those who eat things like French fries or fried chicken regularly, using an air fryer to cook them can cut out calories and fat content. How does it work? An air fryer is a kitchen appliance that cooks by circulating hot air around the food using the convection mechanism. The air fryer works by coating the desired food with a thin layer of oil while circulating air heated up to 200 degrees Celsius or 392 degrees Fahrenheit, so almost 400 degrees, apply heat and initiate the reaction. So lightly oiled and then, all right. So that's what air frying is.
Yes. I knew it had something to do with confections. I was not aware that there's a little bit of oil on there, but that makes perfect sense to me. You know, like your steak, maybe, or I don't know how you would do French fries. That's a little deep for me.
Well, I'm looking at a picture of one, and there's a basket that goes in this air fryer.
Oh,
so if you picture a long cylinder, maybe, I don't know, let's just say it's a foot tall, and then in the center, a basket slides out, a sealed basket. So you put the food inside that basket.
Uh-huh.
You put a top on, a vented top on, and then you put it back in. So in the case of French fries, it would be oiled potatoes, right? Into the basket, and then turn the son of a bitch on.
I'll be damned.
And
God, we've got so much equipment around here. I've wanted one of those. I saw one being advertised, and it was on sale for, I don't know, $200 or something, and I thought, geez, I'd love to have that. But we don't have any room on our counters.
You know what?
With all the stuff we have.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the Vitamix, the Cuisinart, the KitchenAid mixer.
Yeah, all kinds of big time technology in just a basic kitchen now. So I guess it would depend. That would probably go in a cupboard. But you know, do you eat a lot of fried foods? If you don't eat a lot of fried foods, then I guess it wouldn't really matter.
No, but you can roast chicken in there, and it would be spectacular. Would be my guess.
But
rubbing a little bit of oil on the chicken itself, and it would crisp it up. Or you could do the same thing with pea cuts of chicken, you know, wings and thighs and breasts, and rub them with a little oil and put them on a tray and turn the oven on and. Should be great.
Yeah, should be awesome. What the somebody had asked me if you had a favorite kind of pickle that you like to serve when you serve food that required a pickle. I said, well, I think I've seen him eat them. I don't know about serving them. So if you served pickles, what would you serve?
Well, there's two pickles that I like the best. Commercial, I like Clausen's pickles, and they're sold all over the U.S. And it's kosher dill pickle.
Got it.
And exceptional. But at home, my wife makes bread and butter pickles, and it's a sweet pickle, and they are divine. In fact, I had two at lunch today.
Two?
No, I did. I had three. She flipped the third one on my plate. I made this crab dip with king crab. I love her bread and butter pickles. And she cuts them like a crinkle cut pickle. And they're refrigerators. She puts them in these jars, seals them up, doesn't heat them or anything. You know, the vinegar and the sugar and stuff, and onions and peppers and seasoning. And then she throws them in the refrigerator and doesn't touch them for 2 weeks. I'm not allowed to touch them for 2 weeks. And then after 2 weeks, you can start eating them. But if you wait a month, which I didn't, they're even better. And they just get better. Now, the ones I had today were made, in September. And they've been in the fridge all this time.
Oh, my God. How could you pass them up for so many months?
You know how many jars she's made? What, do you think I'm stupid?
No.
Come on,
no,
man.
No.
She makes more than one jar. That's all I'm saying. You know, and they're like quart jars or quart and a half jars. Big suckers. And they're fabulous on egg salad sandwiches, chicken sandwiches, everything. Sloppy Joe's hamburgers. Oh, God, on a hamburger with a little thinly sliced raw onion. Does not matter, boy. I'm in heaven. They're divine.
So you
I like pickles. But if you're out and about on this and you don't make them, or your wife doesn't make them, Clausen's pickles, and I think they make a sweet pickle too, but they sell them whole, spears, sliced. I used to buy whole pickles for the Sanders in a 5-gallon tub. And cut them up myself because I had a few customers that wanted the whole pickle, you know, with their hamburger. Come on, Kim, give me a whole pickle, man. So I'd slap a whole pickle on the goddamn, about half the size of the hamburger. We cut them up ourselves. And it's just something I did. But I was at my old restaurant called something else now, and I was having a hamburger, and it was a spear. So they're buying 5-gallon tubs of speared pickles, already cut, pre-cut. Saving on labor.
Attaboy. Attaboy. What about, all right, so that's pickles. What about fried pickles? You ever do those?
Oh, yeah. In fact, they do a fabulous fried pickle across the street at the Toasted Frog.
I'm a huge fan of the fried pickle.
Oh, God. Now, they're all over now. It's I think they pretty much started in the South with sliced pickles.
Hello.
And they drop them in flour.
And they don't pay.
And squash, and then drop them in breadcrumbs, and then drop them in the fryer.
Yeah, they don't. Those huckleberries, they don't put it in the air fryer either. They put it in a deep fryer.
Deep fryer. Yep, they sure do. And those are great. The ones at the Toasted Frog are pickle spear wrapped with a piece of Havarti cheese and a wonton skin around it. And then they put a toothpick in it and drop it in the fryer.
Ooh.
And they come out and they're crisp and they have this dipping sauce, kind of like a ranch dressing. And just killer good.
All right.
In fact,
give me a good recipe for potato skins.
Oh, good. Okay. A lot of people don't eat their potatoes, or when I peel potatoes, and I want to make potato skins, I do a big chunk out of the potato. You know, I'll get about three or four big sides of the potato skin and take about a quarter inch of the potato with it. And then you drop them in boiling water and salt. And cook them for a little bit. Pull them out. You don't want them raw. You don't want to put them in the oven raw. Maybe some people do. I don't. And they're about half cooked, and you dry them out. And then you put a little cheese on them, any kind of cheese you want. I love chopped bacon on it. You know, you take cooked bacon and you chop it. Put it all over. I like raw onions or green onions, whatever you prefer. And then top it all with whatever your favorite cheese is. And then put it in the oven until the cheese starts to bubble. And the skin will crisp up. And you serve them with, ranch or sour cream. Any hot sauce, anything you want. That's what I would do.
Pretty flexible little appetizer, though. I mean, in terms of because of that boat, you could put a lot. And that was the draw of it, right? You could put cheese and bacon and green onions and ranch dressing or sour cream. You could put it all in there. That was the potato skin.
Oh God, yes, yeah. And, you know, you eat a couple of those as an appetizer, and you're right in the front row.
I remember, I think the potato skin was like the first big, like, hors d'oeuvre. I mean, there was a traditional shrimp cocktail and maybe in an exotic place, guacamole, right? But potato skins, if I do recall, were kind of the first big, like, oh, they have potato skins. I think when the appetizer menus got to be so expansive, right?
Yes. Yeah, I don't. It's pretty affordable to do potato skins for a bar to sell them.
Really? Why?
You know, well, potatoes are cheap. Certainly,
but they don't make their own. For the love of God.
Well, what we did was we would take, if we had leftover baked potatoes, we would scoop out the center and cut the potato in half, scoop out the center, And you're talking a seriously loaded potato skin.
Uh-huh.
And you can quarter them. You can quarter them if you know. You can take a baked potato, cut it in half, peel out the center, and make some mashies, hold them the side, or potato cakes or something. And in that boat, you got half a potato skin now. Think about this. And you let it cool and everything and pull it out of the fridge. It's already cooked. You take some chili, put chili in there, and then start building it. And finish it all. You know, you could put chili, you could put onions, you could put bacon. And then you load it with cheese and put it in the oven and bake it for about 15-10 minutes, and it comes out a meal, and pretty damn good depending on the size of your baked potato you use. But that's something you could do at home. And if you know you haven't baked potatoes one night, Mac, you throw a couple extra baked potatoes in for you and Colleen or whoever's coming over. And then when you pull the rest of the potatoes out, you just take them aside and let them cool. And when they're cool, you cut them in half. You scoop out the potatoes, save about a quarter to a half an inch all the way around in the potato. And then wrap them up tight, put them in the fridge, put them in a container, cover them up. And then for a meal, you have some chili to throw in there. Any chili. You can have chicken chili, whatever the hell you want. But, yeah, and then serve that. It's an easy dinner, man. And you'll be the king of the highway. Well, you already are. But.
There you go. Talk to me about one of my favorites is calamari. I mean, I order calamari anywhere I go. But talk to me about is there any way to prepare it yourself? I mean, you bought all your stuff fresh, but if you're a consumer, I don't imagine. I mean, I've seen calamari, and I've actually purchased it at a supermarket, and it's frozen. It was all right. I mean, it tasted like a facsimile of, but if you're going to buy calamari, buy it fresh at a seafood place and then what?
Yeah. And then, do you know how to clean a whole calamari with the body and tentacles?
No. Come on, man.
Okay. Well, you got to take the head out, and then there's a little spine inside the calamari that has the skin on it and kind of like a prophylactic. And you peel it inside out and pull this skin, this little kind of like a membrane, but it's almost like a bone, but it's translucent.
Got it.
And then you cut rings and you use the tentacles. You cut those up too. They're just as deluxe as when you cut calamari rings. And then you soak them in buttermilk overnight. Okay? And what this does, it tenderizes because of the acid in the buttermilk. It'll tenderize the calamari. And then you take them out. You just shake them. All the milk off it, and then you have a little pan, like a dish, say a pie dish, or something like that, a soup bowl, and you put flour and you season it, and you put a little baking soda in there, about a teaspoon of it, that helps makes it crunchy. Okay, mix it up real good, thoroughly. And then you take your calamari after it's drained, then you drop it in the flour, you dredge it. And then if you have a skillet with about a half an inch of oil in it, any kind of oil you want, corn oil, canola oil, whatever you want. And you drop, make sure it's all the flour is off it. I mean, not, you know, it's just dusted. You put it in a little basket. You take it out of the bowl. You put it in a basket, and you shake that basket with like a sieve. And then you, all the flour is out, and then you dump that in your pan on the stove with your oil. Okay? And then you make sure you have a wooden spoon and stir them around so they don't all stick together. And then you have a slotted spatula and or spoon, a slotted spoon, and you're not in there more than a minute, man. The thing about calamari is you do not want to overcook it because you might as well eat rubber.
Yeah, no kidding, because that's what it'll taste like.
That's what it'll taste like. And then you put it on a paper towel, and then a couple of layers of paper towel, and then pat them on the top, and then salt them, and have at them. Put them in a basket with a napkin in there to line the basket, and make your remoulade sauce that you have the recipe for in All Marine Radio, and go for it. And or if you like cocktail sauce, use cocktail sauce, and with a little lemon juice, and there you go. Now, Mac, they have these little countertop fryers. They have their own lid, so when you're not using it, you can just put the lid on and push it aside. You can get two or three. You can do fish like that. You can do chips, French fries. You can do the whole enchilada yourself.
Yeah, you know, and, you could do it, especially now that you've got an air fryer. You could do a whole lot of stuff.
Yes, a whole lot of stuff like that.
Right.
So that's it. That's calamari. Just everybody, please don't overcook it. Maybe a minute and a half.
Maybe.
And if your oil's at 375, don't turn it over 375. You have a thermometer. You can check it out. They have thermometers you can kind of lay in the pan on the oil. And when it hits 375, you turn your burner down to so it stays at that temperature. And then you put your calamari in there. But if it gets hotter than 375, the oil starts to smoke and you'll burn it. Now, canola oil has a high burn point, so I recommend using canola oil.
Got it. The last one we'll cover is shrimp cocktail. You were famous for your shrimp cocktail having a little bit of kick. Will you describe what you did with your cocktail sauce to do that?
Yes, I will.
Kim's a fan. He loves it.
First of all, folks, my shrimp were 16 to 20 count. That means 16 to 20 per pound, which is a pretty good sized shrimp. That's what you ate, Mac, so much of. Now, yeah. The sauce is... I'd say a cup of ketchup, a quarter cup of horseradish, and I used to use a horseradish called Thor. But wherever you find the horseradish, make sure it's in the deli section of your grocery store. And make sure it says hot. But a half cup of, cup of ketchup, a quarter cup of this horseradish, and then I would use a quarter cup of my barbecue sauce. Uh-huh. That was what drove you wild.
I didn't know that.
And yeah, yeah. And if you have a favorite barbecue sauce, that's, and make sure it's not a smoky barbecue sauce. You know, you don't want any, you don't want that liquid smoke flavor in there. So you just, you know, buy whatever your favorite or whatever. If you make your own barbecue sauce without liquid smoke, then you use a quarter cup of that, quarter cup horseradish, half a cup, full cup of ketchup, and then lemon juice to taste, and then you're in the front row. And that, that sauce should last 2 weeks in your fridge, if it lasts that long.
The yeah, I'm gonna tell you, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. The now you've also, I've also heard you talk about that if you have a favorite cocktail sauce, just put some a little bit of horseradish in it as well. Yes.
Yeah, I think it depends on your heat factor, how much heat you can take. But what I would do is, you have a favorite cocktail sauce, I would use equal portions of the cocktail sauce, the ketchup, the horseradish, and the little lemon juice. And you want to, then that'll be a balance, and then you can adjust the heat of the horseradish. But I would use the cocktail sauce with ketchup, personally. That would be my suggestion.
Got it. Do you have a favorite hors d'oeuvre, a favorite appetizer?
My favorite appetizer would have to be, I hate to be redundant, but it would be a shrimp cocktail.
Why?
I remember my grandparents took me to this restaurant and where I had my first shrimp cocktail in New York City.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. And, you know, they came out with six. I think the first time I got to eat four out of the six. My grandparents ordered another one, of course.
Yeah, nobody liked that kid.
No, well, they just, you know, I was 14. What the hell is a guy going to do but eat shrimp cocktail?
Yeah, especially a good one.
They also, yeah, I also had my first raw clam in this restaurant with them. Oh, God, that was good, too. But, yeah, it's, I'd have to say it would be that and then raw oysters.
Raw oysters.
Yeah, oysters in the half shell, baby. And with a little bit of cocktail sauce and a little squeeze of lemon juice. And then just hook it down. The liquor that's in when you open a clam, oyster, there's a little bit of natural liquid, they call it liqueur, in the bottom. And that is just divine.
Just divine, in case you don't know.
Yeah.
All right, big man. First of all, that was an unintentioned trip around the appetizers section of the menu. So probably of all things in most restaurants, it's expanded the most over the course of, the last 20 years or so, is the appetizer section. You know, there did not used to be that many choices on those things.
That's true. In fact, it was very little, you know, mozzarella sticks or some kind of such nonsense.
Yeah,
But the cooks now have gotten really bold and inventive with appetizers.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun, because I can go into a place a lot of times and just eat appetizers for my whole meal.
Oh, well, you know, that's, I will tell you, I mean, now that there's so much good food, right? I mean, you start with an appetizer and they're so good. Yeah. It's not like you want to refrain yourself. And so the American way of eating is big appetizers, big meal, and then roll out of there, right? Yeah. Literally roll out of there. So, yeah. All right, my friend. I certainly appreciate you coming on a little bit early.
Anytime, brother.
And supporting us. So we all hope your back feels better.
Thank you, Mac. And good luck tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I'm excited.
Give it to him.
Yep.
I know you will.
Yep. There you have it, P. Kimball Holmes. Thanks, Kim.
Take care. Thank you.
There you have it. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it on a Friday. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. Jeff Kinney joins us in the first hour. We talk about just our thoughts on a pretty historic day when the United States in no uncertain words, in action, tells Iran we've had enough. So we'll see what happens next. But that guy, make no mistake about it, that guy had blood of Americans all over his hand. So on a personal note, I would commend the President of the United States. I have personal experiences with the things the Iranians did in Iraq, trying to save Marines whose weapons were used to kill them. And so, on a personal note, congratulations to the President of the United States. With that said, have a great weekend. Post-traumatic winning back in action here for the foreseeable future for the next couple weeks, and excited to do it. So, on a Friday, All Marine Radio, over and...